this December 7th through 9th. Check out the EdUp Experience podcast live and in person in Doha, Qatar for the World Innovation Summit on Education. We will be documenting the ideas and innovations from today's most influential global education leaders. Check them out at wise-qatar.org and follow the EdUp Experience podcast for more information.
Yay!
Guys, this is Joe just popping in to ask if you've signed up for your free marketing consultation with MDT Marketing yet. If you haven't, head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, get your free consultation today. Don't do it alone. Find the right partner.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you again. Very excited today. As usual, I always say I'm very excited. It's like my way to ease into these episodes, but I actually am this excited all the time because I get to talk with amazing presidents, people who run businesses in and around higher education, and also bring on co-hosts. This is our new thing here at the EdUp, is to bring on these amazing leaders within and without higher education, in and around higher education, that bring in new perspectives to these episodes. And I have one with me again today. In fact, this is not her first appearance here at the EdUp Experience. First, she was a guest. Then I begged and pleaded at her feet for her to come co-host with me, which she reluctantly said yes. And then once she had fun doing it, she begged and pleaded with me to let her come back another time. And so now I think this might be the third or fourth time. But here she is, ladies and gentlemen. You know her by now. Lisa Honecker.
Yay!
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be back, as always.
Yay!
Do you like that for your intro?
You're always leveling up.
First, I had kind of like the cough thing going on because you were sick. If you remember right, you were under the weather a little bit last time you came on. So every time you would speak, I'd start blasting the cough button. It would kind of be like that. So every time you started, but you're not sick, right?
I am not, and I'm glad that we've moved past that one.
Well, I thought the yay was pretty special
for you.
Love it.
Made me laugh. You make me laugh, Lisa. Anyway, thanks for coming back. Are you excited to be here on another episode of EdUp?
I can't wait. I love all the guests that you have lined up always. They bring such a different perspective to higher education in general. And I'm really excited to talk to Dan here.
Well, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, and you heard his name dropped ahead of time by my guest co-host, Lisa Honecker. She's stealing my thunder. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, president of Queen's University of Charlotte, Dan Lugo. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great today. It's great to be on the EdUp podcast and spend this time with you and Lisa.
Lisa didn't want me to give you the applause at the beginning, but I had said, come on. I mean, he needs an applause, right? She wanted me to give you like a gong or some other kind of sound to get you warmed up. But I said, let's give him the applause he deserves. Let's talk about Queen's University of Charlotte. Aside from the obvious that you're in Charlotte, talk about Queen's College, the work that you do and how you do it. Give us a high level overview.
Yeah. So Queen's is this wonderful university here located obviously in Charlotte. And we are a comprehensive university that has a national reach of students and talent and faculty. We have five great schools, from a school of education to a business school to a communication school to a college of health, all surrounding a college of arts and sciences. And so we blend what's been in our DNA since 1857, which is a tradition grounded in the liberal arts, and then bring cutting edge professional experiences to our students and to the community. And we are in a really wonderful campus here in Charlotte and just thriving amongst one of the most dynamic cities in the country. And I have the honor of being the 21st president of this great university and leading it into its next era of growth.
And before I bring Lisa in for another, to get started with her line of question, I want to ask you about you referenced the cutting edge industry impact that you champion there at Queen's. Give me an example. Like, are we talking internships here? Are we talking, you know, advisory boards? How do you make sure that your students are staying at the front end of what's happening in business? Because, you know, you and I both know, Dan, there's a, I don't know what to call it, an anti-intellectual movement against the college degree, in particular liberal arts education. And then there's a other contingent of folks that goes, oh, this is the most important education you can get, these human skills for the future of work. How do you make sure that your students are staying at that bleeding edge, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that we've got the approach that's going to sustain ourselves and that everyone will probably migrate even more towards, which is this blended approach that our undergraduates have the benefit of having a general education requirement that will create breadth in their experience and to see problems and challenges through really opportunistic and multidisciplinary lenses. Simultaneous to that, they are from day one intentionally required to have real life experiences. So you mentioned internships, and I would stack our approach to internships that require them, that there are curricular classes that ensure that, one, they are prepared to take those internships and be really thoughtful about which ones they select. And then, you know, a portfolio experience that really sums up the whole entire experience so that they can articulate what they've learned both in classes as well as in internships. And then, of course, as a really intimate, comprehensive university, we have, you know, cutting edge faculty that some are full-time staff folks on our teaching group, but others are just executives that are in residence here from the city of Charlotte, because as you know, Charlotte is one of the most dynamic professional cities in the country, and our students get full advantage and that whole entire vertical of what it is to be a college student and what it is to be a professional all merged into one. You mentioned advisory boards. We've got incredible advisory boards serving each of our professional schools. And we're just not necessarily adjacent, but immersed in the business community here in really powerful ways. So our students are in high demand, our faculty scholarship are in high demand, and we're a player here in the city of Charlotte and its economic development.
Amazing.
So are you.
Okay, Dan. I actually am going to unpack a few of the things that you asked relative to Charlotte and the business community there. And then I will kick it back to my partner in crime. But I do live in the same state as you. I am up in the Raleigh-Durham Chapel Hill area. And having a newly graduated, she's a sophomore now, I know a ton of the seniors in her class, which was huge. I think her graduating class was upwards towards 700 or 800, like ridiculous. But a chunk of them went to Queens University. And you're talking about all the growth in Charlotte, which I can personally attest to, both from my line of business and the work that I pull out of the Charlotte area, but as well as a lot of the professionals that have left the big cities and moved to mid-market cities like Charlotte and Raleigh. So talk to us a little bit about how you are attracting those professionals to both serve from an instructional perspective and then on some of those advisory boards?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm really happy to hear that your daughter's school had a number of folks that chose Queens. And I'm not surprised by that because we just have this perfect blend of being an intimate scale experience and a self-contained kind of community and campus where you're known as an individual. And then we have, again, these sight lines into the world of business that are just unparalleled. I would say that we're observing everything that you just, you know, talked about, that Charlotte is hot, right? That it's become an increasing destination for corporate headquarters, for folks to kind of relocate their businesses here. It's becoming an exploding health tech and fintech environment, and it's always been such a finance and banking capital. And we've been here, right, since the earliest seedlings of all of that growth. Just one of the things that I think positions us so well and why people want to work with us is because there's a scarcity of higher education partners in Charlotte. I mean, think about this for a moment. So the city of Charlotte is the 15th largest city in the United States. It's consistently in the past, over the past 10 years, been multiple times in the top five fastest growing. And we only have seven institutions of not-for-profit higher education. You may go, wow, that sounds like plenty. But if you think about Nashville and Memphis, they've got a baker's dozen. If you think about Pittsburgh, PA, and Portland, Oregon, they've got better than 20. If you think about Boston, they've got nearly 40. And we're bigger and growing faster than all of those cities. So, you know, when companies are here and they look to partner with higher ed, we're front and center, right? We have the best location in the city. We are literally walking distance from most of these organizations. And we have a history of being agile and being great platforms for recruitment, as well as for professional development of their own leadership teams to work with the McCall School of Business and provide other opportunities. So I think that's what positions us so well.
That is all real world firsthand knowledge that I can personally attest to, given that I live in the same state. And generally have team members that are in the greater Charlotte area. And then, like I said, my daughter has got kids that are now in year two at Queen's University and loving it, by the
way. Great to hear.
And yeah, and actually, Joe, if I can steal him for one more question before I pass it back.
Completely out of your mind.
Yeah, of course. Of course. He's he's got one for everything, Dan, so buckle up.
My timing's getting better too, Lisa.
Yeah, you're scaring me a little bit, as always. But anyhow, back to regularly scheduled programming. So Dan, you've actually only been there for a relatively short amount of time. You started in 2019, right before the pandemic hit. Queen's College, now Queen's University, was in the news for actually being right out in front of some unique testing for COVID and getting in front of potential outbreaks in the dorms. But COVID aside, walk us through what your first kind of 2 years, 24 months has been like walking straight into COVID.
Yeah, great questions, Lisa. And you are right. I have now been in my role for 2 1/3 years. And it has been an action-packed start to a college presidency. I'm really proud of the work that we've done. And I'm also, I think, feeling very, very fortunate that even though we moved into the pandemic, you know, 7 months after my arrival, at least I had those 7 months. I mean, I don't doubt that you're talking to other presidents in this podcast who just started their roles right on July 1st, 2020. I had that 7 month honeymoon, and we were very, very intentional in being heavily emphasizing outreach. And so we literally, in my earliest weeks and months, focused on hundreds of meetings, both internally and externally, all over the city. So when things shut down in March of 2020, I had a good foundation, right? I had a good foundation of relationships that transitioned into the virtual world relatively well. Now, I'm not going to, you know, try and spin it like, oh, it's been great. I mean, it's been hard. You know, I knew that taking on the role of being a chief executive on a campus meant that there were going to be episodic crises to manage, to get through, that were going to test really the mettle of the leadership team. I don't think anyone ever anticipated the perpetual crisis, right, that we went through. And what we decided as a leadership team and a board and a community, that we were going to put our values and priorities out front. And we said from the get-go that health and safety were going to drive our decisions. That was going to be number one. And, you know, behind that was going to be our academic mission. And then even behind that was going to be, you know, our financial kind of choices and needs. And in light of that, you know, I'm proud that you noticed that Queens was out front in this region for our approach, which at every turn listened to our advisors. We were really excited to partner with Novant Health on how we would mitigate all of the issues around leading a very residential campus in a very densely populated city. And we erred on the side of health and safety. And that wasn't always popular, right? That didn't make my inbox always the most enjoyable. But I felt like I was fully supported by our trustees. There was great alignment with our faculty. And as I looked across higher education, that lack of clarity, right, really, really damaged a number of institutions and their experience, right? There are a number of reputational, dings to the academy. And, you know, people could be mad with me and they could be mad with our decisions, but at least we were clear. And at least clearly our values were out front. You know, we didn't compromise on our values. And I think we're stronger as a result of it today.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, there was, and you said in there, you said action-packed presidency in your 2+ years. I think that's an understatement of the year. I mean, you think about the number of issues that any college president, any campus has had to deal with over this time period, and it's literally, it's unbelievable. It's continuous, right? We're still going. It's, bringing and repopulating campuses, vaccinated, unvaccinated. It's just like a continuing ball that's rolling, and you have to do your best as a leader to try to filter through what's good and what's not. And it is one heck of a job. And I always say this too, because I've talked to so many college presidents now, Dan, and it's not just, you're not just talking about students. I mean, they're the most important part of this, but you're talking about parents, you're talking about businesses and industry in the area. You're talking about press. There's a lot of watchful eyes on what a university is going to do because of the impact they have on the local economy. Do you find that to be the case for you as well?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. And trying to be in tune with all of those different constituencies and audiences that you may think that you're actually making a decision that's focused on students, but it has, you know, pretty broad implications of impact on other communities. We are smack dab in a neighborhood. When the pandemic was going on early on, trust me, the folks that lived across the street and didn't have a lot of information about what was going on, I guarantee you that for a brief amount of time, at least, they saw this campus community as a threat, right? That we could be the super spreader next door, right? That brought the virus into their community. A lot of folks think of schools and colleges as, they're all young, right? Everyone's young. They don't have any risks. Well, you know, I mean, I'm not that young anymore, and neither are the other members of our administration, our faculty. And so we had to have, the care and concern of everyone in the community, even though, yes, our undergraduate population is relatively traditional, right, between the ages of 18 to 23. And so how do we bring all of that together? And I think very importantly, how do we manage the communication and transparency with which we make our decisions and bring those decisions in the most agile and accessible ways to our community? And that was an area where I think we did well, but it was constant management and iteration, and it wasn't always perfect, and it didn't always go as planned. But there was every effort made to bring everyone along, and that's definitely a microcosm of what it is to be a leader, of a community that has such a broad impact. There's an upside to that, and then there's a negative side when you get into moments like the ones we've just gone through.
You said the key word, transparency became currency. And if you weren't transparent with what you were doing, that's when you talked about some of the hits institutions took. It was a lack of transparency in most of those cases where it created that brand erosion a little bit. And it's really important now, especially in what became a virtual world, to be almost overly transparent, because nobody can kind of go in and see it for themselves at the time, right? It was really critical to have open and honest communication. And that brings me to the point in the episode here, Dan, where we like to find out a little bit about our guest. And speaking of transparency, I'm going to ask you a question kind of unrelated to higher ed, but I want to see how you do. It's a little bit of a curveball. You ready?
Maybe.
All right.
Here now we go. Go for it.
That's my game show music.
Nice.
If you were walking into a room, not even if, when you walk into a room at Queens and there's a song playing, Dan, it's your entrance music. What song would be playing to introduce you at Queens?
Well, I am going to go with a classic, an oldie. Do you remember the song Wake Up, Everybody? Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, you know, sung by Teddy Pendergrass. That's one of my favorite songs. I think it's a near perfect song. Music is really important to me. So yeah, that would be one of my, walk-in theme songs.
I like it. You got to be, if the subliminal message there is, you got to be ready first thing in the morning to go in your role.
Absolutely.
And tackle the day, right? It's no rest for the weary is a real thing. And Lisa, I'll bring you back into the conversation here in a second, but I do want to ask, this was really my first question, but I thought I'd wait and kind of get to know Queens University just a little bit before I ask it. You have the yes and messaging on your website. I like that a lot. When I came to your site and I was doing research on the college and on you, it's like, yes, and. It's like, yes is the answer, and this. Yes, and this. Talk about the concept of yes, and why it's important to Queens.
Yeah, I think that the Yes And Initiative is a great articulation of what our commitment is to our undergraduates that enroll at Queens and what we set the bar high for their experience. It starts with an incredible academic experience, a fundamental training in the broad liberal arts, and then extends into professional studies. It then extends outside of the community to get, you know, the nation's best opportunities for internships and experiential learning. It extends further into the service that we provide to the community, and our students are on the front line of that. It extends into the world-class study away opportunities that we have as a result of our longstanding programs that are known as the John Belk International Programs, that an incredibly high percentage of our students get to do curricular opportunities outside the borders of our country to take their knowledge out of the classroom and experience things in a much more deep way in the world. And then it gets into having a comprehensive university with all of the offerings, the clubs, the activities, the arts, the cultural things that there are just incredible leadership opportunities for our students to arrive and on day one become leaders of the whole entire experience. So we are co-creating the Queens experience every single day with our students. And then finally, it is in how we place students, right? It's not just life of the mind. It's not just the residential experience. It is, we are intentional from day one in getting a great professional outcome. And, you know, I think this, we typically, right, have placement rates in the high 90% range. And we were really, as a nation, worried about the class of 2020, if you would recall, like, oh my gosh, yep, they missed the end of their senior year. There's a nosedive of employment across the country. And our first destination report came back a few weeks ago. And we were so proud that through the hard work of our students, the partnership of our career center, the Vandiver Center, and our faculty, 96% of our students were employed within 9 months of graduation and thriving either in grad school or employment. So I think that's what we mean by yes and. It's an articulation of, you know, you don't have to compromise. You can get it all, right? You don't have to sacrifice things by where you choose to go to school. And I think that's a big competitive advantage as you see Queens positioned, especially in the state of North Carolina, that has such a suite of powerful and strong state universities and colleges, that what is the premium for getting a private education? And we demonstrate that at the undergraduate level with our Yes And initiative.
If you're experiencing any level of marketing challenge right now, you've got to ask the hard questions and you need answers. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your future students? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience and future students will respond to? And are you spending more time building reporting than listening in on what your students really want? All of these questions will get answered when you sign up for your free consultation with MDT Marketing. Head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, and talk to MDT. Don't go it alone. Find the right partner. The guys at MDT, the team at MDT is absolutely amazing. Whether your challenge is the cost of inquiries, your melt, your branding, the bad and incomplete information that come with your inquiries, whatever it is, an audit of your challenges will help your institution, and it's free. mdtmarketing.com/edup.
I would say, Lisa, before I pass it to you, that's the absolute mic drop moment of this episode. Over to you, Lisa.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for that. Okay, so I think it was Good to Great that first started Yes And. Would we agree with that? I think,
I think that might be right.
Jim Collins. Yep. And so... Yep. I went to an executive development program in 2016 that was just amazing, but we had an improv group come and speak to us and expand on that even further. So really taking it into the workplace and how we treat each other, but really just making sure in the world of improv, you're there always to make the other person look like a hero. But that is building on Yes And, and that is part of the foundations of improv. So there you go. Fun fact from Lisa today.
Nice. Nice.
Okay. So Dan, moving on to current state and all the awesome things that you are doing at Queen's University, a lot of what you've been talking about today is kind of unique to you in terms of some of the other episodes that I have co-hosted. Obviously, higher education leaders are phenomenal, and the agility and forethought and resilience that they've all demonstrated over the last 2 years has been second to none. But one of the things that's standing out with me today is the business acumen that you've got. Not that your peers don't have it, but it so resonates with me and where I work and a lot of the things that we talk about and a lot of the things that we face today. And I think one of the things that makes you even uniquely special within your peer group is how you have approached diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I know that you did a lot of great stuff at Franklin and Marshall. So what are you bringing to Charlotte at Queen's University?
Yeah, great question. Thank you for focusing on what is central to who we are and our identity and who we're even evolving to get even more mastery and expertise in our growth. This is a deeply personal part of my leadership kind of identity in that I am the first and only member of my immediate family that went to college. My parents didn't go to college. My three older siblings didn't go to college. And so I understand deeply the transformative power that a great education provides for students that come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and underrepresented backgrounds like I did. And I take personally the support and mentorship that I got. And I think that my mission is to return that and pay it forward to generations ahead, but also be a great steward of the motivation that everyone should enjoy about equity, inclusion, and diversity is that we all have a stake in it and we all get better, right, as a result of that work. Sure, there are equitable moments where we need to bridge people to get access to the full spectrum of opportunities. But once we do that, everyone gets stronger, right? Our whole entire experience gets better, our decision-making gets better, and our outcomes get better. And I was really proud to lead some efforts at other institutions from an enrollment standpoint, which obviously focused on the diversity of the community there at Franklin and Marshall College, to leading a task force around equity and inclusion and diversity at Colby, and then to come actually to Queens and inherit, take the baton from my predecessor, Dr. Pamela Davies, that, you know, this, from day one, Queens has been the most diverse student body that I've ever had the pleasure of being a part of and leading. And a lot of people don't really give us credit for that, right? That around a third of our undergraduates are the first of their family to attend college. That's an incredible national achievement. Around a third of our students are domestic students of color, and nearly 10% of our students are international. And then nearly a third of our students are eligible for Pell Grants, which somewhat addresses, you know, a large population coming from lower socioeconomic background. So we've been doing really, really well on the diversification and the representation of who gets the privilege of being educated here at Queens. My generation, so I didn't do that. My leadership now is to take that baton and find a strategy forward to address, one, the fullest representation of diversity in our faculty and staff, which significantly lags behind the diversification of our student body, and then to map out how do we make Queens a model, a national model for programs and efforts to make it the most inclusive and equitable community that we can be. And we've got a journey there, right? I mean, we are a longstanding institution since 1857 that was really a part of a tradition of educating, you know, white women in a very, very affluent community here in Myers Park. If you come to our campus, let's just say that, you know, the surroundings are that there aren't too many folks that are getting Pell Grants, right? That come from Myers Park. So how does that experience really work for our students, our faculty and staff, for them to be positioned to do their best work? And we just launched a task force to address that, to take inventory first of who we are and what we've accomplished and what our challenges are, and then to look across the nation, not only in higher ed, but, you know, I'm blown away, right, at what's happened in corporate America, right, at FedEx and at places like Bank of America. They see and have seized the opportunity to really lead into equity and inclusion and diversity, and we can learn from them. And then to create a real plan, an action plan of how we move forward and who owns this. So it's not an episodic thing, right? Equity and inclusion and diversity is perpetual. We're always trying to get better at that. There's no end zone to spike the ball in, because the return on investment for everything that you do just maximizes you know, what our talent can do when they're here in this community. So it makes sense on so many different levels, and we're just getting started in that work.
I couldn't agree with you more. And Joe, if you wouldn't mind, I'll wrap this up and kick it right on back to you. And Dan, I appreciate the call out for what we are doing at FedEx, for sure. I'm definitely proud of the work that we're doing. And to your point, it is a journey. It is not an event. And there certainly is no start and stop in this, because the world is continuing to evolve. One thing that I've picked up on you is that you truly lead from a place of values. And when any leader leads from that space, only good things happen. So it's just definitely been a treat to chat with you here. But I know Joe's got some other questions for you, so I'll kick it back to him.
Yeah, I wanted to just go stick with that for a minute, because you talk so well and eloquently about diversity, equity, inclusion, Dan. And, you know, coming back to what I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, I was talking, if you remember, I mentioned kind of the I don't know what you call it, the devaluing of the college degree. And you think about, I've just had this question, and you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And there was a point in time where many people believed that education was a great equalizer, that getting an education, getting a degree was going to help with generational wealth. It was going to give you higher standing for people of color, for first gen college students. It's going to give you be the catalyst in your life to vault you to greater successes. And that's just really fuzzy right now in a lot of ways. And it's not, I don't think it's because anybody who's working in education, you know, at a university feels that way. Maybe some do. But definitely business and industry outside of university education has challenged that in the world of work. What's your thought? I mean, is education still a great equalizer for people in this country to really experience equity?
Yeah, you know, I don't actually think that there requires much opining on that. That's fact. That's backed up by data. There's still incredible premiums on the differentiation of what an undergraduate, what a two-year education will result in a financial sense over a lifetime, what a four-year degree does. And at every level, there's a premium, return on investment. So we have to articulate that without any shame and use data and get away, right, from this real kind of mealy-mouth apologetic sense. And, you know, I think that the academy has to own this moment, has to take, you know, stop being such a victim, right, of what the public and the media may say, and start owning our own message. We have to get back on the soapbox.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. We got to get back on our soapbox and demonstrate the public good that we are. I mean, the miracle, right, of modern America to get us to where we're at, right, where if you travel around the world, one of the most diverse societies, right, and we have problems, right, but travel a little bit around the world. We are, you know, an incredible, incredible a city on a hill, right, when we think of other places, that what we've been able to achieve. And when we think about how we've achieved it, let us not ever be, you know, complacent on the true narrative that higher education has been the difference maker at every turn, right? Let's just go back in the history machine here, right? And I take pride in this as a place that you know, was founded in 1857, right, to educate women here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and the South. Think about 1857. This is before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And here's a school that's set up to educate women. And let's think about, right, coming out, what would the United States be if it wasn't for the Morrill Act, right, during and post the Civil War, that set up land-grant institutions all over this incredible country that turned us, right, from a really kind of family farm agrarian place into a power, an agricultural and industrial power. What would the United States be if after the World War II and the GI Bill didn't educate millions of professionals that transformed us, right, into the headquarters of global business for eras to come? Higher education is what did all of that and brought people along. And we're at another one of those moments. The whole world has changed again, right? We're going from, you know, a society that is being automated, that it's turning into a technology-based society, that's turning in, and there's all kinds of challenges to deal with. And let's not forget, you know, what institution that has been the best answer provider for not only our country, but the whole entire world. It has been American higher education that's done this. So we forget that at our peril. We forget that at our peril, that there hasn't been a better system in the world for leveling society, for advancing society, for innovating in society, and for really bringing incredible return on investment for our great country. So yeah, I'm unabashedly proud to be a part of the academy, and will not stand by without, you know, getting on the soapbox to remind folks of who we are and who we still need to be.
I'm glad we could give you a little bit of that soapbox because you're dropping missiles on everybody, Dan. I love it. You know what? I agree with you. The more we show we in higher education start to doubt what we're doing, the worse the product looks. We have to stand by what we're delivering, which is transformative change. Yes, there are issues that we have to deal with, and so does every other business on the face of the earth. You have to deal with debt and cost and product and updates, and all of that is part of doing business. But when somebody comes out completely changed, you've really achieved something. I love everything that you said there, Dan, and I want to ask you the two final questions that we have of every single episode, every single guest. Number one, what did we miss about Queen's University of Charlotte? Anything that you were hoping to say today we didn't get to or we didn't talk about, plug away. And then number two, what do you see as the future of higher education?
Yeah, well, number one, I would say that Queens is in a really exciting moment. We just came out of great strategic planning work that we did. So while everyone else was doing what we were doing, trying to keep people safe, trying to tamp down the crisis, we said, hey, wouldn't it be great if we could also set a vision for our institution? And we created this very exciting vision that's now been approved by our board of who we can be. And it's about being a much more robust player in Charlotte and in the nation's future of higher education. So I want to plug that. And we're excited to be taking this out in even broader concentric circles to get folks excited about this. It's a very much a market-based approach. While there are pillars in it that we are committed to, there's great agility to partner with philanthropy and to partner with other not-for-profits and to partner broadly with higher education to think about what are those tide shifters that will raise all of us in important ways. And second question, what do I think about the future of higher education? I'm bullish, right? I think people have gotten, just because, right, there are several thousand undergraduate institutions right now in higher education, and ooh, maybe a couple hundred of them might not be around 10 years from now, like that means it's a bad time for higher education. I don't equate those two things. You know, I think that they're wonderful institutions that I wish that there was a road forward for them. But I'm not going to cloud that experience with the fact that we are on the precipice, I think, of the most exciting time in American higher education. And it is because of a number of forces. One, the force that we realize that we have to educate our population or the nation is going to fall behind. We just have to. You think of the jobs of the future. Higher education has to adapt to bring a diverse audience in, to give them the training to access the career opportunities that all of these employers need to fill. We're feeling that crunch of talent right now in Charlotte, and higher education is the answer. And then I would say it is because of technology, which in many ways, you know, you covered, I would imagine, you know, the MOOC wars. And what does it mean? Oh, higher ed is going to die because no one's going to need to ever go to a campus again. And you know what the pandemic, the silver lining of the pandemic has taught us? One, place-based education is critically important and it's here to stay, right? Ask a few high school kids if they, you know, are desperate to learn more online. Place-based education is important and it's here to stay. And the wars on campuses of, you know, the 5 faculty versus the 100 faculty that think, you know, teaching online is like inviting the wolf into the hen house. Well, guess what? Everyone jumped into the pool. Everyone had to learn how to use the technology to teach online. So now we have the opportunity to create what a 21st century education is and to use technology without bias and without politicizing it, to think about what is the best pedagogical experience for our students. And we're excited to define that here at Queens and partner with others to redefine this experience. How do we do a better job of scaling what we do best and to make it stronger, because we invite a much more diverse community into the experience, and that we use technology in powerful ways to educate them. So I think if we don't screw it up, and if we don't get complacent in reminding the world, reminding our state governments, our federal government, that the real change makers in society are the higher education institutions, I think the future of higher ed is really, really very, very bright.
Well, I love it. Well spoken, Dan, and I love your passion. You're very articulate, and it was an absolute pleasure. But before I let you go, I want to say first to my guest co-host today, the
amazing
Lisa Honaker. Always a pleasure to have you back, Lisa. Did you have a good time here on EdUp again?
Thank you, Joe. Every time is a great time. And Dan, you are definitely one of my personal favorite guests. I did not get a chance here because we were having such rich dialogue to actually ask you. We have one of your seniors who actually swam at the swim club that my kids swam at and in Cary, but she was a Paralympic gold medalist.
Oh, you're talking about my one of my favorite students, Hannah Aspden. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes, I am. Yes, wow. I am. So we cheered for her from Cary, from the Triangle Aquatic Center. And so we were super proud to see her and two of her peers also who went through Triangle Aquatic Center win medals, as did a few of our others. So it was a fantastic Olympic season this year.
Oh my gosh, thank you. We're so proud of Hannah's achievements. She is just a superstar in every single way. And she inspires our whole entire community, and she gets to inspire the world to see, you know, differences in ability in a really empowering way. And she's so articulate, you know, in explaining her story and opening doors for others. And she's a great, going to be a great professional. Someone needs to fight for her services as a lead communications person in her next chapter. But she seems pretty set on going to Paris, and I would never, ever, ever bet against Hannah Aspden. And she represents, right, our championship NCAA swim team, which, by the way, you know, we won the last six Division II NCAA championships in a row, both on the men's and women's side. I was actually over at the pool this morning, and we've got 12 banners on the wall.
Nice. Well, if you two, when you two get together to meet up for coffee, since you're in the same area, make sure you take a picture and tag us on social media, because I have a feeling that'll happen. To our amazing guest today, the president of Queen's University of Charlotte, Dan Lugo, we appreciate you so much. Thank you for coming on. We hope you had a good EdUp experience today.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. And I need, you know, if I ever come back, you know, a better sound effect at the beginning. I'm just saying, okay.
I'll find one for you.
I need equity in the sound effects, because Lisa.
Be careful what you ask for, Dan. Awesome. Be careful what you ask for. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You've just EdUpped.
Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your audience? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience responds to? Are you spending more time building reports than listening in on what your audience wants? These are not easy questions to answer. That's why our great friends at MDT Marketing are offering a free audit of your marketing efforts. Head to www.mdtmarketing.com/edup and submit your information for your free consultation today. Look, guys, you got nothing to lose. It's free. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free audit to tell you what you're doing, whether it's effective, and how you can make some incremental changes that can make a big difference moving forward. That's www.mdtmarketing.com/edup.